Secret of America. Tonight's star, Lee Bowman. Tonight's DuPont Cavalcade, Fiber 66, starring Lee Bowman as a chemist whom we shall call Steve Balfour, is a story of something dreamed of for ages, sought after for centuries. The story of something new under the sun. Fiber 66. When I think back to the 22 years, it's hard to believe that there was a time I felt strange among them. And a little afraid. We met together for the first time at the DuPont Experimental Station in Wilmington, Delaware. That was 1928, March of 1928. When I came in, a tall man, tall and thin, walked up to me.
Hello, you're Dr. Balfour.
Me, Balfour, that's right.
I'm Jim Chalmers.
Oh, I'm very glad to know you, sir.
When did you get to Wilmington?
Just this morning.
I came down on the early train.
Mm-hmm. Wife with you?
Yes, she's out shopping for a house.
I see. Well, I think you'll like living here.
I know we will.
Come along. I want you to meet the others.
Gentlemen, we have a newcomer with us, Steve Balfour. Dr. Stompkins.
Glad to meet you.
How do you do, sir?
I shook hands all around and stood trying to appear relaxed and exchange small talk. The next day, I met Dr. Wallace Carruthers.
Dr. Carruthers, here's our latest recruit, Dr. Balfour.
Glad to have you with us. Glad you decided to come. Have you met everyone?
Oh, yes, we've met.
Wallace Hume Carruthers, only 32 when I first met him. Thin, medium height, his shoulders already stooped a bit. He had a sensitive face, and there was a shyness about him, yet a warmth.
Sit down, gentlemen. Let's get acquainted.
Dr. Carruthers walked over to a blackboard, absently picked up a piece of chalk, and then turned to us.
We have an extraordinary opportunity, gentlemen.
I remember how he stopped, turned to the window, looked out at the trees just beginning to come alive with spring. He turned, faced us again.
The DuPont Company has been one of the pioneers in the intelligent marriage of science and industry. Up to now, of course, industrial research has been undertaken, for the most part, with specific objectives in mind. Improvement of materials, refinement of products already in existence. Applied research. That work will continue. Must continue. But this is different. Our work is going to be in the field of fundamental research. Pure research. The work that we do together will be aimed at filling in the gaps of knowledge affecting important chemical processes and products.
Carruthers walked away from the window. He came toward us, smiling.
Why is the DuPont Company doing this? Well, they know. They know full well that the prosperity of their company, the future growth of the DuPont Company, is dependent upon new knowledge, new developments, new materials, unknown today, but possibly sold over the counter tomorrow. Sound all right?
Yes,
sir. Good. Then let's get started.
Hello, Mary. I'm sorry I'm a little late.
That's all right. I just got here myself. How did it go today? Isn't it unlucky, Jack?
Oh, it's tremendous. Better than I dreamed it could be.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Pure research. Under a man like Dr. Carruthers, it's the opportunity of a lifetime.
Pure research?
Yes, just that. We're going into fundamentals, digging down into the roots. We're going to look into the private life of protein molecules.
Protein molecules? What's the difference between a protein molecule and a common garden variety?
A lot of difference.
Tell me.
A protein molecule, my pretty thing, is the building block of living matter. Everything that grows in the world, everything that has life, that's organic, is made up, at least in part, of protein molecules. You, for instance, are basically a tasty dish of protein molecules.
I am.
You are?
No. No one ever told me that before. I'm glad I came.
Well, I'll tell you about it, dear.
Not now. Right now, the only thing you can do for me is to buy me a juicy cut of protein molecule. Medium rare.
Later, when we finally were settled in our new house, I explained it to Mary.
All right. Tell me about the protein molecules. I'm all ears.
That's not true.
You mean I'm not all ears?
No, as I told you once before, you're just a gorgeous chunk of protein molecule.
Mm-hmm.
Now, come here. Sit here at the piano with me. Now, look. I'm listening. Here's a C on the piano. In chemistry, it stands for carbon. One carbon atom.
Gotcha.
Now, suppose F sharp represented oxygen, an atom of oxygen. Now, we combine the two. And what do we have?
Music.
We have a combination of a carbon atom and an oxygen atom. A molecule of carbon monoxide.
Which is deadly stuff, and I want no part of it.
All right. Now, let's add another oxygen atom. Carbon dioxide. One carbon atom and two oxygen atoms. Will you buy that?
Sure. That's what plants need to breathe, right?
Right. A molecule, then, is like a musical chord. It's a combination of two or more atoms. Now, just as a musical composition is made up of a series of chords, everything on Earth, gas, solid, or liquid, is made up of a combination of molecules. And all molecules with any one substance are always exactly alike.
I'm ashamed to admit it, but so far I understand.
Okay, that's wonderful. Well, let's go a little further. Now, let's take our molecule, hit another exactly alike to it. Come on. Come on now, help me. Hit the same chord. Next octave up.
Like this?
Good. Well, you've got two hands. Don't just sit there. Another molecule, if you please.
Now what do we have?
Now we have a group of similar molecules all together. Hit it.
Oh.
And that's a giant molecule, better known as a polymer. Now, nature is busy all the time making up these giant molecules. Chemists have always been fascinated by this process, and they keep trying to duplicate the trick in their laboratories. But when they do it, make big molecules out of small ones, they call it polymerization. And that's what we're up to at the experimental station. We're studying polymerization.
Trying to make big ones out of small ones.
Yeah, that's right.
And what happens when we do?
What happens when we do? The growth of trees, grass, rubber, cotton, silk, men. The growth of all living things is largely natural polymerization. Little molecules being built into bigger molecules. Now, if we can learn to do a similar job in our laboratories, the promise is limitless. We might, for instance, stretch our molecules out in long parallel lines, as we believe they are in silk, and find us a fiber as fine as silk, and do it without silkworms and mulberry leaves.
Just by doing this?
Just by doing this.
Oh, this is fun. Silk, huh? Well, come on, let's play me a pair of new stockings.
All right, come on. When we began, a molecular weight of 4,500 was tops for laboratory synthesis. Mother Nature turned up her pretty nose at molecular weights less than 10,000. She really begins ticking at the 30,000 level. 4,500 to 30,000. We had a long row to hoe. Within a year, we managed to get weights of up to 5,000. But at that point, we were stymied. Until Carruthers had an idea.
Come in. Door's open.
You wanted to see me, Dr. Carruthers?
Steve, I'd like you to take this sketch to the glass blowers. I think they'll be able to follow it.
What is it?
A form of molecular still I've designed to adapt it to our problem. One reason why we haven't had much success boosting our molecular weight seems to be because we're constantly plagued with the water formed during the condensation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this little contraption should help us distill out almost all the water.
It looks like a great big Christmas tree ornament.
It does, doesn't it?
I'll get it to the glass blowers right away.
Fine. Oh, incidentally, Steve, how are things coming? You happy here?
Well, all right. But I can't help feeling a little low. We've been at this thing over a year now. And as far as I can see, we haven't made much progress.
Well, Steve, it's just a question of how you measure progress. A fellow once went fishing in a little pond. And all the time he was fishing, a little local boy kept watching him from a distance. And finally, the boy came up to him and he asked, "How many fish have you caught, mister?" "None," the fisherman grumbled. "Well," says the little fellow, "you ain't doing so bad. A fellow was here last month and he fished for 2 whole weeks, and he didn't catch no more fish in 2 whole weeks than you ain't catched in only 2 hours.
Hey, you get that still made up. Maybe it'll help for fishing.
The new molecular spray worked like a charm. In a few months, we had our molecular weights above the 10,000 mark. This was the first big step forward. These new giant-sized molecules were tagged superpolymers. And these, we hoped, would be the key to a long-locked world of new substances and fibers. One day I was working at the lab bench next to Jim Chalmers. He called over to me.
Hey, Steve, you have a glass steering rod handy?
Uh-huh.
Let me borrow it for a minute, will you? I want to lift this mass of goo out of this flask.
Well, let me help you. That's ethylene glycol and the basic acid mixture, huh?
Yes, that's right.
Sticky stuff, isn't it? Looks like a glob of molasses.
Yeah, there we are.
You should lift it up.
You know, but... Well, look at that. Instead of it all coming up in a solid mass, the rod has pulled out a few strands, filaments.
How far can you pull it out? Is it elastic?
I don't know.
Let's give it a few seconds to cool.
Did you ever see anything like this before?
No, nothing precise like this. Shall I get Dr. Carruthers?
Yeah, no, not yet. Let's make sure of ourselves.
All right, the filament has cooled a bit now. Let's see if we can stretch it. It does stretch.
Look at it stretch. At least two times its original length, maybe more.
Look at the sheen. It's like silk.
Yeah, now, wait. Let's not go off half-baked on this thing. You never know.
Well, what's to do now?
Repeat the experiment. And repeat it again and do it again. Let's make sure this isn't a freak. All right, Steve, let's get a melting point on it.
It melts at 125 degrees. That's low, awfully low.
Now try heating in hot water. See what happens there.
It decomposes.
Falls apart.
Warm it in carbon tetrachloride, cleaning fluid.
It dissolves.
Well, let's go back to Dr. Carruthers.
Well, it's pretty obvious that this particular polymer won't stand up.
Let's take a different tack. Try analogous compound.
Similar compound.
Run the gamut of the polyesters and polyamides.
One thing won't work. Try another.
Months went into this new line of research. We kept boosting our molecular weight. But all of the fibers we found had the same basic fault. They weren't practical. Some melting points were too low and some were too high. None of the polymers had the right combination of properties. Finally, Dr. Carruthers totaled up the score.
Well, it's a little disappointing, I know. It would have been a little feather in our caps if we could have come up with a fiber of practical value, but obviously we haven't been able to do that. However, I think we've done quite well as it is. We've achieved some remarkably high molecular weights. And we have shown that it is possible to obtain a fiber by polymerization. Yeah. Well, don't look so glum about it. Jim, get all the material together. We'll prepare a paper on our findings for the Journal of the American Chemical Society.
Okay. What's our next attack, Dr. Carruthers?
On fibers, Steve?
Of course.
We're dropping that line of research.
What?
That's right. I've spoken to Dr. Brandon. I told him that we'd like to tackle the synthetic rubber problem next.
But Dr. Carruthers, we're on the right track. This particular fiber may be impractical, but we're close. We can develop one that is practical.
Okay, let's admit it. We've run out of ideas. The reservoir is run dry. But we've got to have time to store up some new ideas. But it's not failure. Far from it. We've added to the sum total of scientific knowledge. And that's achievement no matter how you look at it. We've done a good job of fundamental research. Fine.
Now, let's move on to the next camp along the trail.
Dr. Wallace Carruthers, head of the fundamental research group of the chemical department of the DuPont Company, had called off our search for a practical, usable synthetic fiber. Sure, I was disappointed, but I didn't have much time to moon over it. We dived headfirst into the rubber problem and developed a product that eventually became neoprene, the first successful synthetic rubber. About this time, something else had developed, too, a depression. Remember? All over the country, business was entrenching, tightening its belt.
We all figured that our department was expendable. And when one morning Dr. Carruthers called me to his office, I felt sure the jig was up.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Well, you look like a tom turkey the week before Thanksgiving.
It's a rainy morning. Didn't get the morning paper delivered. Had a flat on the way out here. Just one of those days.
Need some cheering up?
I sure do.
All right. You're back on synthetic fibers.
Say that again.
I don't have to. You heard me.
That means we're keeping on. The research budget for next year has been okayed?
It has. Well, I know you were worried about it. But the executive committee feels that the entire future of the company is wrapped up in research. They're right about that.
Sure they are.
All right, Steve. We're out after a practical synthetic fiber. Let's get started.
Research is 99% painstaking drudgery. Unexciting, monotonous, time-consuming. There are 1,000 failures to 1 success, but each failure is knowledge. Each negative is a step forward. For months we were at it. We formed fiber after fiber.
What temperature does it melt?
150 degrees centigrade.
Well, that's good, but not good enough.
We'll try something else.
We've got a fiber that'll take over 200 degrees centigrade without melting, but it turns gooey in alcohol.
That won't do. Try something else.
Here's one with a high melting point. Won't dissolve in alcohol or any solvent. Only its tensile strength is low.
Well, follow the way with the others. It's no good.
We kept plodding at it. We developed a spinnable product, but it didn't look practical for commercial production. We worked out hundreds of possible chemical combinations, juggling the molecules around. Dr. Carruthers worked over the problem quietly, studied it coldly and calmly. While the rest of us were beginning to doubt, getting impatient, he picked a combination that proved the winner. It was summer, 1934. I'll never forget it.
Steve, I've got a little notion.
Yes, sir?
Let's take a crack at hexamethylene diamine and adipic acid.
All right, sir. I'll follow it up. Never mind the jaw-breaking names. Just remember this. Carruthers had the touch of genius to select the right compounds, then and there. There were 6 carbon atoms in the diamine, 6 carbon atoms in the acid. 6 and 6. 66. On February 28, 1935, we had polymer 66. Carruthers had a batch of the molasses-like stuff in a cylinder with a hypodermic needle tip set in its base. Pressure was applied, and out of the tip came a thin, silk-like thread that seemed to float in the air.
Tested.
We tested it. Day and night we tested it. Tensile strength, 26,000 pounds per square inch.
That's good, Steve. That's great.
Let's get a melting point. Okay, up to 263 degrees centigrade.
Fine. Now try the solvent.
Polymer 66 is insoluble in all common solvents.
We may have it, Steve. We may have it at last.
More went into the intensive research, testing, retesting new formulas, and new twists to old formulas. But in the end, polymer 66 was the winner and still champion. And now the cloudburst hit. Chemical engineers moved into the picture, mechanical engineers, physicists, metallurgists joined them. A pilot plant was built, and the specialists were pulling it apart, improving it, before the last bolt was in place. This was teamwork. This was modern industry in action. On October 27th, 1938, we all went up to New York City. The annual Herald Tribune Forum was going on, and Dr. C.M.A. Stein, vice president of the DuPont Company and its advisor on research, was one of the speakers.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Mary and I sat way in the rear of the hall. We heard him, though. We heard every word.
I wish to announce now, for the first time, the creation of a brand new textile fiber. It is the first man-made organic fiber produced wholly from raw materials of the mineral kingdom. The material from which this fiber is made has literally hundreds of possible uses. We have named it nylon. Nylon can be spun into filaments as strong as steel, as fine as the spider's web, more elastic than any of the natural fibers such as wool, cotton, or silk. Shortly, the first nylon plant will begin to rise in Lower Delaware. It will cost $8 million and employ 1,000 people.
Mary. Mary, are you here?
Oh, I'm here in the living room, dear.
Oh, what's the matter, honey?
You're the matter. You and that nylon of yours. All day long, that phone's been ringing. 100 women must have called me. Well, it seemed like 100 anyway. Please, Mrs. Balfour, won't your husband get me some nylon stockings? Like the kind I saw at the World's Fair. Just one pair, size 9.5, that's me, please. Oh.
Oh.
Well, what am I supposed to tell them?
I'll tell them to wait until May 15th, 1940. Public sale starts then.
Well, do you think that any woman will be able to wait that long for stockings that are supposed to last forever?
Mary, that isn't true. Well?
They won't believe me. They say, I'm being modest.
Oh, for the love of me.
Well, what am I supposed to tell them?
Well, tell them that all things being equal, nylon hosiery should wear as long as other high-quality hosiery of the same weight.
I tell you what. You make a record of that, and every time the phone rings, I'll play it.
And anyhow, the DuPont Company doesn't make the hosiery, only the yarn.
Don't I know that? Is it my fault that the Bridge Club isn't asking for explanations? Or they want stockings, nylon stockings? It's all your fault. You never should have had to make the stuff.
May 15th, 1940 was end day. All over the country, in stores all over the country, nylon hosiery was to go on sale. I was curious as to what the public reaction would be, so I took the day off and went to one of the stores in Wilmington.
Now, you just stand here next to the counter, Mr. Balfour.
Okay, Freddy. Let them in.
Oh, that's fine. I won't be in the way.
Oh, no, not at all. Oh, the doors are opening. Here they come.
Oh, here they are. Nylon hosiery. I'll take 2 pair, please. 5, 10, any shape.
Will you wait on me, miss? I was here first. I'll take these.
Wait a minute. Let me out, ladies, please. Please.
I had that pair first.
Oh, no, you don't. That is not.
Please, ladies, let me out. I'm being swamped.
Please.
Mary, what are you doing here? Help me. Help me get out of this.
Oh, sure, darling. Come on. Now, take hold of my hand. I'm used to these grabs.
Oh, boy. Wow. What a mess. I almost had the wind knocked out of me.
Are you all right, honey?
Yeah, I guess so.
Sure?
Sure.
Good. Now, you stay right here.
Where are you going?
Well, back to the corner where I was, of course. I came down here for a pair of nylons, and so help me, I'm going to get me a pair.
Well, that was the beginning of nylon. Nothing spectacular, just a case of scientific planning, building big molecules out of small ones. But in the end, we found what we were looking for, a truly synthetic fiber, something new under the sun. And here's a point you might remember. Our nylon research team was just like a lot of others here at DuPont. Now that the job's done, the team's disbanded, and individually, we've gone to work on other projects. Me? Oh, I'm still here at the experimental station at Wilmington, working in a new building now, a building that was dedicated in 1946. There's a plaque on the wall that you can see as you enter. It reads, "The Carruthers Research Laboratory, E.I. DuPont, the Nemours and Company, Incorporated, commemorating the classical researches of Wallace Hume Carruthers, born 1896, died 1937, on the structure of polymers, the mechanism of polymerization, and the invention of nylon, dedicated September 17th, 1946. What am I doing now? Well, same old thing, I guess you'd say, working in the submicroscopic world of molecules. Now, what's that? So you want to know what I'm working on? Well, I can't say exactly, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if you'll be wearing it sometime in the next 10 years.
Our thanks to Lee Bowman and the Cavalcade Players for tonight's story. Next week, the stars of the DuPont Cavalcade will be Joan Fontaine. Our play, Mary of Mary Hill, tells of a glamorous lady of colonial New York and how she saved the fortunes of General Washington and the cause for independence.
Be sure to listen. Tonight's DuPont Cavalcade was written by Irv Tunick, appearing with Lee Bowman in tonight's drama, Wesley Addy as Dr. Carruthers and Judy Parrish as Mary. Music was composed by Arden Cornwell and conducted by Donald Ruiz. The program was directed by John Dollar. Don't forget next week, Joan Fontaine. The Cavalcade of America comes to you from the stage of the Belasco Theater in New York and is sponsored by the DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for a better living through chemistry.
Daddy has a problem, and it's Baby Snooks on NBC.